Welcome to Local Matters. It is a Monday, and when it's a Monday, I sometimes am surrounded by some of the favorite people I know, and one of those today talking to us on our program, Local Matters, is Frank Scold of Cookeville. And one of the many things that I learned about Frank as I got to know him over the years is his love and passion for Corvettes. I had told Frank years ago a story about my love of Corvettes, which was from a very, very young age. It included the fact that when we were small kids, we used to go to crash-em-up derbies locally, and these cars would smash into each other, and whatever car happened to be standing at the end was the winner of the crash-em-up derby. And along that point, my appendix ruptured at age four, and in the moments that I was before going in for an operation, my family begged me to pull through and they would give me any gift I wanted. And I emphatically declared I wanted a concrete Corvette should I pull through this. And unfortunately for them, when I came out from under the, we used to call it the ether, they had given me a toy Rolls Royce and I was absolutely furious at age four. I mean, even a toy Corvette would have made me happier, but, you know, I wanted a Vette over a Rolls Royce. And I don't know why. I mean, I still love the look of the Corvette today, but this is the guy that can tell us why. So, Frank, for starters, I'm going to have to ask, and I'm seeing a couple of pictures in front of me. How many Corvettes do you own currently?
Currently, three.
And tell us about one by one. Just start with one and tell us about one of your...
The latest one is a what's called a C7 2016 yellow convertible, and it is, yes, and that is it right there.
Yeah, I'm looking at that. That's quite a beauty.
It's in the parking lot too.
You brought it over here today to the radio station
with the top down.
With the top down. Wow, quite a beauty. How did you come about acquiring this car?
Oh, I looked for it for probably about 3 months on the internet, and found it in Chattanooga, and went down, took a look at it, made up my mind on the way home after I'd taken a look at it and driven it a little bit. I said, okay, I think I like that car.
Yeah.
So I had to go down again and get it.
Okay. Took you twice to fall in love.
Twice.
Two dates.
Well, one time to fall in love and two times to take it home and love it even more.
Right. Okay. You know, so many good things and so many bad things about the internet that we've learned in all the years we've been on the internet, quite the double-edged sword. But one of the things is finding items, if you will, and people. I've been introduced to people that otherwise I might not have met. And so this is how you found this beauty that 40 years ago would have been harder to find, right?
Oh, yes. Have to spend all the time driving around all over the dealers and looking at the newspapers and trying to find the ads in order to finally find the Corvette you want.
Sure. And of the other two photographs, am I looking at the other two Corvettes that you own now?
Yes.
I see a purple beauty here with some great detailing on the side.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
That's what is called a C3. Excuse me, a C5, and that's got the Indianapolis 500 graphics on it because it was the pace car for the Indianapolis 500 in 2002. Why 2002 and a 2003 car? Well, they brought the car out a little earlier, just before the 2003 year was, and so it was available. They ran it around the track, and it paced the Indianapolis 500 in 2002.
And how did this great beauty it find its way into your home?
Well, a friend of mine had it, and I'm starting to talk to him a little bit about it, and I said, well, you know, if you got ready to sell that car, let me know. He said, well, I'm about ready to. Opportune moment.
Right.
I said, I think I'm interested.
Being in the right place at the right time.
Being in the right place at the right time.
Now, a lot of people, you know, can look at the exterior of a car and recognize, you know, beauty and design. But what a lot of people are not proficient is the department of engines, you know. And engines, we will all agree, have changed rapidly over the years.
Oh, they have. Especially in the last few years.
Yes. So what could you tell us about the engine of this particular car, especially since we're talking about an Indy 500 car?
It is the Indy 500 car. It was, I made it an Indy 500 car. The car itself was the car on the track, but with much more modifications than the one I have now.
I see.
But I was able to buy the graphics and have a local outfit put them on the car. Beautiful. So it looks like an Indy 500.
Right, yeah. That's great. Engine-wise, so, for example, let's go back to your first car, your Beauty, which is yellow, that's a convertible. As the old saying goes, what's under the hood? And when I ask you that, I want to say to you, talk to people that don't know about engines at all, what's under the hood and makes this car the feel the way that it does and drive the way that it does.
Actually, what it is the base engine for the Corvette in 2016, which was a 355 horsepower V8 at 6.2 liters.
Okay.
And that's basically the engine.
Okay. Now, you and I know what a V8 is. For some people, a V8 is that thing that they drink out of a can that has a tomato flavor.
So, yeah, I've had some of that myself.
Tell the average person that would be threatened by, if they were to open a hood, what a V8 is and the importance of it.
V8 has two sides to the engine, four cylinders in each side, forming a V when it's together.
There you go.
And the pistons go up and down and run the car, right. And it runs down the road.
And a V8 versus a V6, as we could say to viewers that don't know about cars, because I'd like people to be able to understand this, that don't know about cars and just understand your passion is, in this case, more is more.
More is more.
Yes.
Yes, it is. And a V6 is nothing more than two cylinders less than a V8.
Yes, yes.
But otherwise, it's the same thing, same configuration, forming a V.
Yep. Quicker response, right? 0 to 60 quicker.
Yes. We've got more cylinders.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. So I see another Beauty in front of me. This one looks to be a little bit older, but I'm not sure. What am I looking at here?
That is a 40th anniversary Corvette from 1993.
Ah.
Now this last one of the Indianapolis 500 was a C5 2003. 50th anniversary.
I see.
They're both the same color.
Yeah, interesting. And just the difference in age by 10 years.
Right.
Yeah. So how many cars have you, how many Corvettes specifically have you had in all?
I think it's getting approaching about 12.
12?
Yeah.
Favorites among those?
Favorites are the brand new C7 one. It's not brand new to me, right. But it's brand new to me.
Yeah.
But C7 is a magnificent car. Drives like a charm and goes as fast as I want to go. Maybe faster than it should, but I like that. And lost my train of thought.
Well, we're talking about fast cars that you've had, including your most current. And I was thinking to myself, the next question I wanted to ask you is, do you have a place where you can take them and drive them? Because if you don't, as you may or may not know, a best friend of mine who works in law enforcement now teaches high speed pursuit. As you know, Troy, you've known him for some years, works in the southeast Georgia region and has both, if I understand correct, access to former county roads and racetracks. And do you have a place that you could take a car and open it up legally by law?
The National Corvette Museum in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
I didn't know it was that close.
Yes.
That's great. Wow.
Yes.
So
they have a 3.5-mile track up there that you can take a car out, and it's got all the activities and safety features and everything, and that you can open it up as fast as your car can go.
I am picturing you suddenly in all the great car movies I've seen. You know, I've never pictured you as the guy behind the wheel going at fast speed. The highest speed you've been on, you've been on the track then?
Yes, I have.
What's the highest speed you've been at?
Well, when you go up to the track up there, you have followed the lead car, so to speak.
Yep.
And we reached 150 miles an hour.
150.
Yes.
That must be so much fun.
Yes.
Even in my stupidest teenage years, did I never get above 100 that I can think of. So to be at 150 and safely driving.
And safely,
has to be an absolute thrill.
Well, the track is laid out in such a manner that it will help you stay alive.
So the secret to your eternal youth is simply adrenaline rushes on a regular basis.
Yes, it is. Yes, very much. Adrenaline rushes are great.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I agree with you. And again, you know, it helped along with somebody that does the, or you're guided by somebody that are not allowing you to have an right. adrenaline rush to the point that you hurt yourself or damage
right.
the car.
Right. Yeah.
And along the way, now you as a teenager, by the way, did mm-hmm. you have Corvettes as a teenager?
Yes.
And did you? I'm sure you had to exceed the speed limit once or twice, right?
Oh, just once.
Little
just once.
Rush
just once.
Did you ever get a ticket for speeding in a Corvette?
No, never have.
Oh, okay.
I've had tickets in other cars, but not in Corvettes.
So the lesson learned today is if you're going to speed in a Corvette, right?
Right.
I think so. Wait
yes,
a minute.
Yes,
I think we're getting a little confused here. But nonetheless, what was your first love? Do you remember first love as a Corvette? The first one that you looked at and said, got to have that.
Okay.
And,
in 1953, my father and I went down to the Chicago, what's it called? McCormick Place. In Chicago, and the Chevrolet was producing, or General Motors was producing, what's called the Motorama, at the introduction of the brand new year of cars, and this was in 1953, and that's the year that the Corvette came out brand new, but it was not a production car; it was just
a prototype?
Not even a prototype. It was just a demonstration or dream car type thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what if we built this thing or whatever?
Yeah.
And so I saw it there, and I thought, wow, I like that.
Yeah.
And so I put that in the back of my mind, and when I became 18 years old, I had a 59 Corvette.
You were 18, and you had a 59 Corvette.
Mm-hmm.
That's the beginning of a very, you know, lifelong love affair. We are talking to Frank Skold, who is a person that knows all things Corvette and loves them, but we'd love to listen to our commercial sponsors who make this program possible, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Frank Skold.
What's so important about shopping with locally owned businesses?
When you shop local, your hard-earned dollars stay here in the community, helping to benefit your friends and neighbors, local schools, roads, and all aspects of community life.
But what happens to my money if I spend it online or at a national chain store?
In most cases, the profits go far away, out of state, corporate headquarters, or even overseas.
It doesn't take any extra effort to shop local. Office Mart on South Jefferson and Cookeville is your locally owned office furniture and supply store. For over 35 years, they've been proud to serve businesses in the Upper Cumberland with quality and value. You get real customer service, too. And unlike shopping online, you can actually see and try out the large inventory of office furniture in their showroom. And when it's delivered, it's not a box on your step. They're glad to install and set up everything. Office Mart. There's no other locally owned office store in the region. South Jefferson Avenue across from Hardee's. Shop local at Office Mart.
This is Local Matters with Louis Matheny, and I'm talking to one of my favorite people in general, who is a local person in Cookeville, Tennessee, who has something of interest that matters. And it's an interesting topic to me personally, and those of you, even if cars aren't your thing, I think will find quite fascinating, because it's really a story of true loves, or multiple true loves. And as Frank Skold was telling us, his started when he was a teen. So remind us, what year and what did you fall in love with then?
I fell in love with the Corvette itself at the Motorama in Chicago, Illinois, in 1953, which introduced as a potential car, you know, dream car type thing or whatever. Lo and behold, it became a car that was rushed into production. And became the first cars were shipped from the factory on June 30th of 1953. Excuse me. 1953.
I didn't know that. So that's interesting. Yeah. So here we are at this Motorama, which in some ways would be the World's Fair for cars. And this is a dream into the future that I guess a lot of people, there were a lot of young Frank Skolds, and you were how old?
I was 13.
So there were 13-year-olds. They were older teens, and there were guys like Frank who was there with his dad saying, "I love this, I love this, I love this." And I guess in overhearing this and talking to people, they decided to make this dream an actual car. And for those of us that love cars, the Corvette has been a favorite among many people for years, whether we've owned one or not. You know, I can remember as a kid loving to say Stingray Corvette, even though I didn't know what at the time a Stingray Corvette was. And for those of you that don't, I bet Frank can tell us the difference between a Corvette and a Stingray Corvette.
Stingray was introduced with what's called the C2 variety, or the second generation of Corvettes, in 1963. Was the very first Stingray, Corvette Stingray.
Right.
And they've been producing, and they were produced as Stingrays throughout the livelihood of the C2 or the second generation of Corvettes.
Mm-hmm.
And then on into the C3, third generation, it carried on into about 1976 as a Stingray.
Frank Skold, who loves Corvettes and knows things all about Corvettes, has also been involved in a Corvette club for some years. And that's when I really first heard about you and your Corvettes. I think that you and I happened to be in town, or were going to be at the same time, and you mentioned, no, I'll be away for a Corvette club meeting or convention. So you've been involved in a Corvette club for some time.
Yes, I've been involved in a Corvette club back in Chicago when I had my Corvette back in Chicago. I got a club in Hinsdale, Illinois that I joined. And then, of course, as I went through the years and the Corvettes and whatever, I wound up in Cookeville, Tennessee in 1978, driving a 1976 Corvette.
Wow.
Down here.
Wow.
Had a terrible time coming down through Illinois and Kentucky on glazed ice roads.
No kidding.
But I finally made it.
Yeah, good. Glad you made it in one piece.
You're about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you just slid the whole way. We can't even attribute to how the car handled the trip down. Back to the Stingray for a second. What distinguishable features? I have my own guess, and I've never had this discussion with anybody. What are its distinguishable features that make it a Stingray versus the other Corvettes?
The actual design of the Stingray, which is really the feature of the whole thing, was a shark that was on the wall in General Motors facility in Detroit. And Bill Mitchell at the time, being the designer of automobiles, and he decided that he would build a car that looked like a shark.
I see.
And he brought out and they called it a Stingray as a trade name or whatever you want to call the thing.
Right.
But, yeah, they...
In many ways, it's profile, you're saying. If you were to look at this thing from the side, that's funny. See, in my mind, I'd always had a completely wrong theory, and that is that structure of metal with the windows, the set of windows that are raised in the back, had a more of a, if you'd say, manta ray quality to the body, and not like a shark at all. But I love that. The real story is fantastic.
Yeah, the story, the shark was on the wall, and Bill Mitchell had his designers.
Yeah.
Design a car that looked like the shark.
I'm going to go back and look again. I really am going to study that one and see.
And I'm a little bit off on what I'm saying from a standpoint. The shark actually didn't come out until 1978. Yes, 1978. Before that, the car was a Stingray. Yes. But a stingray and a shark are different.
Yeah.
And as far as fish are concerned.
Yeah.
And they are different, very different Corvette also.
You know, years ago, 71, 68, no matter what the year, I think having a conversation with someone like you whose love and passion is absolutely fascinating to me means that others like myself are going to go out and do a little reading and finding out more about the Corvette. And I've had favorite cars over the years and watch movies about cars. I've always been a fan, and we can all talk about what we think our favorite car chase scene is. And in my mind, I can't think of a Corvette car chase scene from a movie. So tell us about any recall that you have of cars, Corvettes in movies that you can remember.
Not necessarily is there a chase scene, so to speak, other than the fact that I'm sure there were some Corvettes through the years and used in movies and whatever that became chase scenes. But you know, the, as you're talking about, the chase scenes that everybody remembers are the Mustangs and whatever.
Steve McQueen and
Steve McQueen, right? Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But I'm thinking, okay, but Corvettes in film, were there signature Corvettes in film or TV shows that you can think of? I'm blanking off the top of my head.
Corvette Summer was probably the only movie that I can remember, right, recollect right now.
I didn't know there was a movie, Corvette Summer.
Corvette Summer. Yeah. And it was a car that, or I should say a movie that, they... people used in, you know, during the summertime and had a ball with it. You know, whenever went to the beaches and went to the mountains, whatever. This is all California,
right? 1960s film, 1970s. We think
it was a early 70s. Film, early 70s. If I remember right. Yeah,
I'm a film buff. I'm going to go watch Corvette Summer.
Yes, you need to.
Absolutely,
you need to. Lewis, you need to
call up Turner Classic Movies and tell them to get it onto their roster.
Right.
You know, now Corvettes never branched out into the production of cars that don't resemble the sleek, low-profile potential racing car. They've never, Corvettes never, I'm going to assume, done anything like a Corvette van or a Corvette El Camino or a station wagon or a, right?
They did do a Corvette station wagon.
No kidding.
But it was just a designing sample type thing.
Yeah,
you know, like, can we make a car that would look a little bit like a station wagon but still be a Corvette? Yeah, they did it.
And then do it, but it didn't go into production.
No, it did not go into production.
I can't imagine.
No.
Yeah.
No. And the Manta Ray or the shark type car, it never really, you know, they did a lot of styling stuff on it, but it never became a real car. But an awful lot of entrepreneuring. Fiberglass car builders built, took basically a C2 type Corvette or C3 type Corvette and made it into a Shark or whatever car they were, but it was, so there were never any built by Chevrolet or General Motors, other than design models.
Sure, You must have been to a lot of these shows along the way, where, like, you've been to the probably the car shows in New York at the Jacob Javits Center and seen just design ideas, dreaming big, and these things never materialized into actual vehicles. And I've always found those kind of fascinating, you know, because they're always a look to the future with a nod to the past. And that's the great thing. You know, along the way, I think there have been many mistakes by many car companies in which they've been trying to replicate a car from a previous engine era. And I started to say engine because it's cars from previous eras that were muscle or, you know, big engine cars. And you know what? If you didn't buy one then, the new version is never going to be the same, you know, as the original. Whereas the Corvette continues forwarding its own design ideas with the same simple, sleek, fast style that they've always done. They've never relied on a gimmick and said, let's go back and do something that we did years ago that I can think of,
No, it really has always been forward.
Yeah.
Forward thinking and progress, that type of thing, and how can we do it better?
Yeah, exactly. So along the way, favorites that you've had of the many Corvettes that you've had?
Favorites are, of course, the 59 Corvette, very first car that I ever, you know, Corvette that I ever
first
owned
love.
And whatever.
First love.
First love, right.
Okay.
And then I would say then the 1963, 64 Corvettes that I had were next best, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then on from there, would go into the C5, as it's shown in the picture here, the Indianapolis 500 car. That was a great car.
Yeah.
Drives like a champ.
Yeah.
A beautiful car.
Yeah. Well, you've had many great loves, and we know your first great love in real life, and though she's not here, we honor her with this discussion today. But to have had that many loves in the car department is something to be said, and the people you've met along the way, obviously, the camaraderie, you know, through the Corvette Club, and whether it's on a local level, national or international level, it's a common language that I'm sure all of you love speaking. Frank Skold, and what is your position at the Corvette Club?
I was secretary of the club for the last 2 years. And I gave it up because I said, it's just too much work to be a secretary.
Right. So you're still at the Corvette Club.
I'm still at the Corvette Club in Crossville, Tennessee.
And here at Local Matters, we've been talking to Frank Skold, fan of the Corvette.